The last word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
Well, I'm absolutely delighted that for today's Culture Club, we're joined by an international superstar of literature, a man who many feel could be described as the great living American novelist. And his new book is called Sorry for Your Trouble. Richard Ford, thank you very much for joining us here on the Culture Club. How are you keeping? Are you well?
I'm keeping very well, as well as can be. I mean, it's not a good time to be in America, but we're doing our best.
How are you actually managing with what we call over here on this side of the Atlantic? Cocooning is something that's recommended for the over 70s. How are you getting on with that?
Oh, over 70s. You would have to throw that in, wouldn't you?
Sorry, Richard.
You're not as sorry as I am. I feel like I've got a target on my back. Well, Christina and I live by the sea. I mean, if the earth weren't curved, I could probably see you right now. We live right straight on the other side, and we live on the sea, and we live in the woods more or less. And so we can get out, and we can walk in the woods, and it's not half bad. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous to say that when there are people dying. And when there are health workers who are putting their lives on the line every minute, and when there are police officers, you know, jeopardizing themselves, it's ridiculous in a way that there should be this immense disparity that there is in the United States. It's one of the great sadnesses of American life, in fact.
The book, Sorry for Your Trouble, that's a great Irish expression. And one of the short stories that you have in it as well, The Run of Yourself, another fantastic Irish expression. You really have picked up an awful lot in all your many visits to Ireland, haven't you?
Well, that's it. Good. That's well said, I think. Picked up. That's what I do. I pick things up. I hear things. I write them down. I hear this. I write them down. Someone says something to me. I, you know, go off in a corner and squirrel it away. It's sort of more of a mosaical process to write books this way rather than a linear process. But it works. I mean, I was trying to create some sense of an Irish background for some of these stories, not get at the essence of Ireland because I wouldn't be able to do that, but create a credible background for these stories. And that's how I did it, just by picking up this over a long period of time, picking up that and hearing this and hearing that.
Actually, even the expression, sorry for your trouble, which is the great Irish expression to use at funerals, is something that's been denied us during this COVID-19 lockdown, because funerals are greatly restricted affairs now, only to immediate family, very small numbers. And that great Irish tradition of being able to go along and express your condolences and sympathy and support is one of the things that's being denied to us.
I understand that. But you know, Matt, and I don't mean to sound like an expert in such things because I'm not, but grief and mourning are not ceremonial in nature. We can actually create ceremonies for them, but to grieve or to mourn or to miss or to long for are experiences we have in our heart. And I don't think are lessened because we can't express them publicly. I don't mean to say that the public expressions of grief aren't valuable for all kinds of reasons and for all sorts of people who are affiliated with the loss, but grief itself can be experienced solely, I think.
Richard, in the Culture Club, what we do is we try and find out your influences, the things that have formed what you are now. And I want to actually ask you about, as a novelist, as one of the great American novelists, who do you particularly like reading? What do you love to pick up?
I'm pretty Catholic, if you let me use that expression in Ireland, about what I read. A lot of my friends are writers, of course, and so I read them. Over the course of a long life of writing, a few of us have sort of lasted to be able to keep doing it. And so I read my friends a lot. You know, I read my contemporaries a lot. And I'm like anybody else. I will pick up a book review and read some young writer. But I'm mostly reading writers who are older and who've been at the task for a long time.
Can you give me some examples, some names? Because I'm sure there are people listening who'll think, well, if Richard Ford is reading them, that's a good recommendation. I should be reading them.
Well, I could name some of my Irish pals. I mean, Roddy Doyle and John Banville and Claire Keegan are writers that I read a lot. And in Wright, I read sort of always. So for Irish writers, there are those. In the United States, I read Ann Beattie. I read Martin Amis, who lives in the United States now. I read Ian McEwan. I read Gee whiz, the names don't come tripping off my tongue. As it is now, I'm sort of reading War and Peace, just hoping to survive it.
It's not your first time reading it, is it?
I'm afraid it is. Yeah, I know. We're not supposed to admit that. We're only supposed to say, Matt, that we're rereading these books, right? Well, Christ, I couldn't have read that book when I was young. I'm too slow a reader. I would have got discouraged. And now I have a cocooning opportunity to read this book every day, which is the way you should read it. But if I were younger and doing more than I'm doing right now, I probably wouldn't last.
Are you enjoying it?
Yes, very much. Yes, very much. You have to give it 100 pages, right? Most books, you think, well, I'll get the sense of this book and whether it's worth doing if I read 25 pages. But with War and Peace, you have to give it 100 pages. You have to go to all those parties first and figure out who all those people are at all those parties, most of them speaking French.
We asked you for a favorite novel, and you recommended one by Walker Percy called The Moviegoer. Before we hear from the audio book of that, a short extract, tell us about the novel and why it is in particular that you focused on that.
Well, it's a book that I read in New Orleans, which is always a sort of a lucky moment for anybody to read a book that's set in a place where you read it. I mean, it's like reading Herzog living in Chicago or reading all kinds of books that were written in Dublin. But I read this book in 1974 in the city of New Orleans when I was living there writing my first novel. And it's a book that is so transcendently true to New Orleans. It also does that wonderful thing, this book, which is that it's funny and grave at the same time. Henry James said that there are no themes that are so human as those that express out of the confusion of life the relation between bliss and bale. And bliss is in this book, bale is in this book. And it's also just extremely funny and witty. And it's not very long. There's almost nothing not to like about it. It's not War and Peace.
Well, let's hear a short extract from The Moviegoer. This is read by Christopher Hurt.
I remember when my older brother Scott died of pneumonia. I was 8 years old. My aunt had charge of me, and she took me for a walk behind the hospital. It was an interesting street. On one side were the power plant and blowers and incinerator of the hospital, all humming and blowing out a hot, meaty smell. On the other side was a row of Negro houses. Children and old folks and dogs sat on the porches watching us. I noticed with pleasure that Aunt Emily seemed to have all the time in the world and was willing to talk about anything I wanted to talk about. Something extraordinary had happened, all right. We walked slowly in step. "Jack," she said, squeezing me tight and smiling at the Negro shacks. "You and I have always been good buddies, haven't we?" "Yes, ma'am." My heart gave a big pump, and the back of my neck prickled like a dog's. "I've got bad news for you, son." She squeezed me tighter than ever. "Scotty is dead. Now it's all up to you. It's going to be difficult for you, but I know you're going to act like a soldier." This was true. I could easily act like a soldier.
That's from The Moviegoer, written by Walker Percy, and that extract read by Christopher Hurt. Richard Ford is our guest on the Culture Club today here on The Last Word on Today FM. Richard, we ask our guests in this slot to remember the first single or album that they bought or that they'll admit to having bought. You have gone for Bo Diddley. Tell us why.
Well, because it was the first album I ever bought. It had that wonderful single on it called Cracking Up, and I'd never heard such a thing in my life. It's hard to think that a boy living in Jackson, Mississippi at age however old I was then, 1959, 14, 15, would never have heard this kind of a guitar lick. But if we have that, if you hear that, you won't ever forget it. I mean, Bo Diddley also, of course, was born in McComb, Mississippi. He was part of that diaspora that moved to Chicago and really went to high school in Chicago. But he had that great relationship between the South, not the Delta, but South Mississippi, and the South and Chicago. He's produced and recorded by Leonard Chess. And for me, that was Mississippi music the first time I ever heard it.
Let's hear a little bit from the album Go Bo Diddley. This is the track that Richard has referred to, Cracking Up.
Yo. spin. You're always screaming about the money I spend. What's bugging you?
Great track that is. Bo Diddley, Cracking Up.
That makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck when I hear that.
It's wonderful. We've asked everyone as well to nominate their favourite artist or band, and lots of people have nominated Bruce Springsteen, but you specifically said Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. Why were you specific about including the E Street Band?
I guess it sort of harkens to an anecdote a bit when Bruce was... This is in his biography, his memoir. When Bruce was put into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Stevie Van Zandt came up and said to Bruce, he said, I think we should all go in together, don't you? And Bruce said, no. He said, I'm going in by myself. And then later, the E Street Band was put into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and Bruce came along and inducted them into it. So in a way, it sort of expresses what I think, which is even though Bruce is the head of the band and Bruce is the headliner and all the things that Bruce obviously is, the band is central to what he's doing, I think. And so I just want to give them their due.
Have you seen Springsteen perform live? Because I've seen him perform live solo. I've seen him with the E Street Band. And I've always preferred it with the E Street Band. There's incredible life and energy to their performances. More enjoyable, I've often found, than actually listening to a Springsteen album. What do you like best about Springsteen?
Well, I'm just a Springsteen devotee. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I saw the stage show, which he did in New York a year and a half ago, twice. And I thought him being on stage by himself was just elevating. It was just spectacular. But as you say, when he's playing with all those guys that he's known since he was a kid, they have a kind of sodality, a sort of group ethos that's really irreplaceable.
We have a track to hear. This is Born to Run, a section of it that shows off the band, particularly Clarence Clemons on sax at its finest.
Show.
classic 80s Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band, Born to Run.
It's interesting hearing you say that, mate. Classic 80s. How old does that make me? Sounds very contemporary to me.
Don't worry, it sounds contemporary to a lot of us, Richard, a lot of us still. But you have gone back further to pick something which I reckon you must have been a teenager when you saw the Motown Revue in concert in 1964, which you've picked out as your best concert. Why so?
Well, it's the first real concert I ever went to with Christina, my wife, and Berry Gordy, we were in Michigan, and Berry Gordy was in Detroit, and he used to send his whole entourage of musicians all around the state of Michigan, and they would play fraternity parties, or they would play those mini concerts, and we happened to hear them outside one time, and we heard we heard the Four Tops, we heard Gladys Knight and the Pips, we heard Martha and the Vandellas, we heard everybody, not Stevie Wonder. We didn't hear Stevie Wonder. Christina and I saw him at some other time when he was just 14 years old. But it was just one of those galvanizing moments in life in which you'd been listening to these guys and these women play and these musicians play for now a couple of years because they were just sort of getting into what became Motown. And suddenly here they were. They were right in front of us. What was on the radio was vivid in front of us. And it made life feel for us. I know that fantasy which radio can create is actually quite vivid and real, and you can have it. And I suppose that was the experience.
We actually have part of the Motown Revue from 1964. This show was at the Fox Theater in Detroit, and you mentioned Martha Reeves and the Vandellas, and this is Heatwave. Yep. That bring you back, Richard?
Well, you can imagine little Christina and little Richard dancing to that in 1964, because that's exactly what we did. Wow.
Okay, we need to take a break. We will be back with more in the Culture Club here on The Last Word of Today FM with Richard Ford straight after this.
The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
Welcome back. We're delighted to have the celebrated American novelist Richard Ford with us today. We've been hearing his music selections. We've been talking to him about books. But let's talk about movies. Are you a big fan of watching movies, Richard?
Well, I probably would be if I didn't live in the United States. I mean, we live out in the woods, and so finding a movie house at all, of course you can't find one now, but finding a movie house at all pretty much commits you to watching a lot of drivel for the most part. So I'm, yes, a great fan of movies, but I spend, unfortunately, a lot of time watching it on Netflix now.
You've chosen a classic from, I suspect, does this go back to the 1970s? Chinatown, 74. With Jack Nicholson and Faye Dunaway. Why particularly that movie? Why does that still hold an affection for you?
Well, for a novelist, for a whole lot of reasons, but because it's so stylish on its surfaces. All its production values are so stylish. The story itself is so labyrinthine as to you almost have to see it several times to figure the whole gist of the story, and it's completely engrossing. Because the story is so complicated about providing water and stealing water for the L.A. Basin from way up north of Los Angeles and the politics and all of that. And Nicholson and Dunaway are so sort of classically the last of the old Hollywood star system. And they pull it off with such grace and such style.
Let's hear a clip of Jack Nicholson, Faye Dunaway in a scene from Chinatown.
I found these in your backyard in the pond. They belonged to your husband, didn't they? Didn't they?
I don't know. Yes, probably.
Yes, positively. It's where he was drowned.
What?
There's no time to be shocked by the truth. The coroner's report proves that he had salt water in his lungs when he was killed. Just take my word for it, all right? Now, I want to know how it happened, and I want to know why, and I want to know before Escobar gets here, because I don't want to lose my license.
I don't know what you are talking about. This is the craziest, the most insane thing.
Stop it! I'm going to make it easy for you. You were jealous. You had a fight. He fell. He hit his head. It was an accident. But his girl is a witness, so you had to shut her up. You don't have the guts to harm her, but you got the money to keep her mouth shut. Yes or no?
No!
Who is she? And don't give me that crap about your sister because you don't have a sister.
I'll tell you the truth.
Good. What's her name?
Catherine.
Catherine who?
She's my daughter.
You've put it in mind now, Richard. I think I'm going to have to go back and watch that again.
We just saw it last week. I see it about once every 6 months. I just have to see it again. It's just that scene that you just played is the sort of great, memorable scene in which Faye Dunaway admits that Catherine is both her daughter and her sister. And it's the divulgence that she is the victim of Mrs. Mulray is the victim of incest by her father, played by John Huston.
Okay, let's move to television. Do you watch much television? A lot of people say we're in the golden era for television, but do you watch many of the dramas that have been produced over the last decade or so?
If they're made outside the United States, I do. Yeah, I watch a lot of English ones. I watch some French ones. Watch some Swedish ones. Yeah, I do. I mean, these are ones that you get on Netflix. The stuff that's on network in the United States, I'm afraid I don't watch that.
Have you not been a fan of things like The Sopranos or The Wire or Breaking Bad, any of those type of things?
I never watched an episode of Breaking Bad. I got tired of The Wire and actually watched every episode of The Sopranos. You have your tastes, you have your predilections. I generally didn't watch those series. They began to make me feel like I owed them something. And I didn't feel like I had to pay it up every week. Now, of course, you can watch them streaming if you want to and watch all of them in a single sitting if you choose.
You picked something from way back, Jackie Gleason, The Honeymooners. Now, that's something that used to be shown on Irish television as well many, many years ago. And Jackie Gleason was this big, larger-than-life character. Why did you pick The Honeymooners?
Because it's hilarious. Because Jackie Gleason and Art Carney are together just two classic, antic comic actors. But both of them of Irish descent, I believe. I mean, Jackie Gleason was born on the west side of New York, in the Irish section of the west side of New York, and they all came out of vaudeville. And they brought those great vaudevillian, you know, skills to television. That was the first time I ever knew what vaudeville was, and it was noisy, and it was slapstick, and it was falling down, and it was big laughs. It was large. It was real, you know, physical comedy, which for me is the best for me. It's Chaplin-esque in that way.
Let's hear a scene from The Honeymooners featuring Jackie Gleason.
Alice, I'm home.
Be right out, Ralph.
Look at this. Wow. Boy, this kills me. Bills, bills, bills. Why doesn't anybody send me a letter or something? Well, there's a relief. Postcard. Wonder who it's from. Pretty sneaky, the gas company, to send a bill on the back of a postcard. Oh, boy, that ain't the worst of it. Now everybody in the building knows what you're paying for your gas bill. What are you talking about? Mrs. Schwartz, that blabbermouth, she looks at all the postcards and then yakety-yak-yaks all over the building. You're kidding. I'm not kidding. I know how much a gas bill is. 93 cents. That's right. See? Oh, by the way, Ralph, congratulations on that 93-cent gas bill. Mrs. Schwartz told me that you broke the all-time low gas bill record set by the Collier brothers in 1931.
That Jackie Gleason in The Honeymooners. You mentioned earlier seeing Springsteen on Broadway, but for a favourite play or musical, you gave us something from Broadway from 1961, Camelot, with Richard Burton. Why so?
Yes. Well, because I was 17 years old and I was living in Jackson, Mississippi. And this was going to be my first time to come to New York. And my mother said to me as she sent me out the door with my grandparents to go to New York, she said, "Oh, Richard," she said, "you have to see a Broadway play." That's what was my mother's fantasy. She never did it herself. You have to see a Broadway play. So when I got to New York, we actually stayed in a hotel called the Dixie Hotel, which is featured in Midnight Cowboy, by the way, a real Fleabag. But I wanted to see a Broadway play, and Camelot was played. It always, for that reason, has a place in my heart. If it were being put up today, I don't know if I'd go see it. But with Robert Goulet and Richard Burton, it was quite wonderful.
Well, we have the original Broadway cast recording, and this is Richard Burton singing the theme song from Camelot.
It's true. It's true. The Crown has made it clear. The climate must be perfect all the year. A law was made a distant moon ago here. July and August cannot be too hot. And there's a legal limit to the snow here in Camelot. The winter is forbidden till December. And exits March the 2nd on the dot. By order, summer lingers through September in Camelot. Camelot, Camelot, I know it sounds a bit bizarre, but in Camelot, Camelot, that's how conditions are. The rain may never fall till after sundown. By 8, the morning fog must disappear. In short, there's simply not a more congenial spot for happily ever aftering than here in Camelot.
Not Richard bad for a guy Burton. Who can't sing. But wouldn't you like to, Matt, wouldn't you like to have written the line "Happy Ever Aftering"? I don't know. If I could write that line, I'd hang it up.
Last piece that we can get to is a favorite play that you have nominated, Harold Pinter's The Homecoming. Why so, Richard?
Well, because it's so boisterous and it's so noisy and it's so deeply dark and funny at the same time. I don't know. Every once in a while, I will go to a performance of it, even though I don't generally go to the theater. I'll go see a performance of it because it's spectacle of a grave and almost morbid but immensely funny kind. It's Pinter at his best for me.
Let's hear a scene from Pinter's Homecoming featuring Ian Holm and Vivian Merchant.
Excuse me, shall I take this ashtray out of your way?
It's not in my way.
It seems to be in the way of your glass. The glass was about to fall. Or the ashtray. I'm rather worried about the carpet. It's not me, it's my father. He's obsessed with order and clarity. He doesn't like mess. Besides, I don't believe you're smoking at the moment. I'm sure you won't object if I move the ashtray. And now perhaps I'll relieve you of your glass.
I haven't quite finished.
You've consumed quite enough, in my opinion.
No, I haven't.
Quite sufficient in my own opinion.
Not in mine, Leonard.
Don't call me that, please.
Why not?
That's the name my mother gave me. Just give me the glass.
No.
I'll take it, then.
If you take the glass, I'll take you.
Quite some tension in that, isn't there, Richard?
Well, there's tension, but there's also a great deal of levity in all of it. If you see that play, that's an extremely menacing, but at the same time, immensely comical scene.
One that has to be seen. We've run out of time. Richard Ford, thank you so much for taking the time to join us here on the Culture Club on The Last Word of Today FM. We really, really value the fact that you've taken the time. Are you using your time as well in semi-isolation to write more? Do you have more that you will be bringing us in the future? Although, of course, we have just got receipt of a copy of Sorry for Your Trouble.
Yes, I'm writing a novel. Why not? I mean, what better thing to do at a time like this? Try to make yourself useful.
And is the novel going to be following the footsteps of previous work involving one of your central characters, Frank Brascombe?
If I live, yeah, I think so. It's called Be Mine, and it's set in contemporary. Though it's not set during this pandemic. It's set just a little bit before the pandemic occurred, Valentine's Day, 2020. But it is a Frank Brascombe novel. Yes, it is. Thanks for asking.
Thank you for being with us here on The Last Word of Today FM. Richard Ford, as ever, it's great talking to you. And we look forward to seeing you in Ireland again sometime, hopefully, in the near future.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.